I bet you're pleased to see me, Martin.
I am very grateful. I am very, very grateful. I cannot express how grateful I am, Charlotte.
Dear listeners, I may have got stuck in Birmingham Airport for a number of hours delayed for flights, which then made for rather a stressful start to this week. But I am here, and that is the main thing, right, Martin?
Absolutely. We've all got these airport stories to share. Recently, I was named and shamed by the pilot as the last of the stragglers to get on a flight back to Birmingham. So I share your pain with the fact that things can go wrong. What was that other place that you didn't have a good experience in? In America, I think it was, an airport.
Okay, maybe we should gloss over that one.
They let you in the end, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I just I landed in Chicago and was having to go through their, obviously, border control, and had my passport taken off me and put into a room where I was definitely the only female. And at that point, I was like, just let me go home. So actually, yeah, in comparison, being stuck at Birmingham for 8 hours, fine. Hi, I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Rees.
I'm Martin Winch, and welcome to The Ag Show.
In this episode, we'll hear from a young pig farmer who converted her old horse box to create a mobile cafe.
During COVID, as lots of pubs shut their restaurants, I was seeing more and more food vans about, and I thought, that's something that really interests me, actually. Something that, again, I could do on the side of farming.
We'll continue the pig theme, add in some more red meat, add a whole heap of dairy as we get the exports results from last year.
So in both of those categories that we support, we broke through the £2 billion marker for those sectors for the first time. So that's really exciting, bringing over £4 billion into our UK livestock sectors.
And Hannah Clark will be making an appearance, albeit very much too briefly, as she picks out the highlights from our lamb market outlook.
A reminder then, new episodes of The Ag Show drop every Wednesday at midday, available wherever you get your podcasts.
With audio and video versions for every show. Just subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode.
And please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Comments on any of our social posts or email agshow@ahdb.org.uk.
Over the last couple of episodes, we've featured a couple of inspiring farmers who've found unique ways to diversify.
That's right. Yes, we've heard from Kate and her woolen ropes. And last week we had a tour of Callum's potato store that he's turned into paddle courts.
This week we're joined by a young pig farmer who's started an additional business in her old horse box. Molly Ann Jimson, welcome to The Ag Show. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I think a great place to start would probably just finding out a little bit more about you. What's your background and, you know, where do you farm? What do you do in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, so we farm near Beck Row, which is just the other side of Mildon Hall. We're an outdoor pig breeding unit with just over 1,000 sows. So we're actually in contract with Pilgrims, which means that they provide us the pig, the medicine, the feed, and we provide the lands, the equipment and the staffing. And effectively, we're just producing a five-week-old piglet, which gets sent to another farm for finishing.
So what made you decide to think about branching out and have this inspiration for setting up your horse box into becoming a bit of a food truck? Because that seems to me, you know, I wouldn't necessarily think, I'm farming in the day, let's go and start a new venture.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was very much involved from the farm from a very young age. And because of that, I kind of knew what direction I wanted to take in life. So when I was 16, instead of doing A-levels, I actually went to college to study agriculture. From college, I knew I wanted to do something for myself. As much as I love the family business, I really wanted something for me as such. Got thinking kind of combined my two passions, which are cooking and farming. Walked past my horse box one day, kind of saw a gap in the market and thought, could I do something? Did lots of research. It's not quite as easy as you'd think, setting up and converting a very old horse trailer, but got there in the end, yes.
I was going to say, like, I wouldn't even know where to start on thinking about doing a conversion, let alone setting up a business. Like, logistically, how did it all kind of work?
Yeah, so originally I thought, you know, we've got some people that help us do some mechanics and stuff on the farm. I thought we could do it ourselves. The more research I did, the more rules I found, and just thought it would be better to get it converted professionally. So as soon as I made that decision, that really took some weight off my shoulders, really, because they knew all the regulations I needed to follow.
And where did you get the inspiration for, I mean, you said you obviously had the trailer, but I would not think, so my background's very much with horses, and I would, if I would never have considered turning my trailer into a food truck. So how did that come about? Where did you get the inspiration for that?
During COVID, as lots of pubs shut their restaurants, I was seeing more and more food vans about, and I thought, oh, that's something that really interests me, actually. Something that, again, I could do on the side of farming. I would also see it as an easier stepping stone to getting into catering rather than, you know, opening a restaurant or, you know, something which, you know, you have to put all your time into. I saw this as more something I could do on the side.
So how do you split your time then with the business and then the farming? Is it that one takes more priority of the other, or is it just as season dictates?
Yeah, it's definitely seasonal, but kind of my weekly structure would be Monday to Thursday on farm. I also do every other weekend on farm, which means Friday is kind of my prep paperwork day for the food van. Mostly have an event Friday in the evening or Saturday in the evening. And then, like you say, seasonally over summer, when things pick up, luckily, you know, we can switch weekends around. I hope that they fall on my weekend off. It doesn't always work like that. But yeah, it's just juggling, really. But I say 80% of my time is on farm, mainly because most food van events are in the evening.
Doesn't sound like you get much time for, you know, you time, bit of time off. It sounds like you're very busy. With the different events and things that you go to, are these like pre-booked events? Or I'm just thinking, like, round by me, we've got a local farmers market where we have loads of food stands. Is it that type of events that you're going to, or are they bookings for parties?
For me at the moment, it's a complete mix. I'm really lucky to have some great local pubs that kind of, I call them, like, they just tick me over 2 or 3 a month, which is great, especially in winter. And then I've really found the best way is just word of mouth. Most people that book me for a wedding or a party is because they've tried me. Yeah, it's kind of amazing how quickly things get around, really. I think I have a lot to thank for just the local pubs, really, and getting my name out there that way.
And the proof really being in the pudding, in the what you're providing, I guess, and the great food that you're doing. At the moment, do you have plans for expanding your business, or are you quite happy with how things stand? Because in all fairness, I don't know how you'd fit in doing more unless you suddenly get more hours in the day.
I know, I do sometimes wonder that, but I'm already midway to my expansion. About a month ago, I have bought this kind of a low loader style van, so it'd be bigger than the trailer behind me. And the aim is to attend slightly bigger events. So with a horse box, it is limiting. There's only so many people you can feed out of a horse box. So with the low loader van, it hopefully attends bigger events, county shows, you know, weddings with more people, things like that. Like I say, I purchased the van about a month ago and it's booked in for a conversion in April to be finished in June. And by that point, hopefully I'll have a good team of people to help me. So it's not just me and the odd person helping me now and again. I keep saying it might free me up slightly, but I don't think it's going to end up that way. Definitely not the start anyway.
I think you're going to be busier than ever, but I'm very pleased to hear you say that you will be trying to take on more people to help you support. Because I was thinking there's no way you're going to burn yourself out.
Yeah, you're totally right. I'm hoping that, you know, at some stage I'll be able to have 2 vans out at once, a really good team, but, you know, it'll all be a massive learning curve when we do get there.
I think this might be a great point to sort of stop. And if you want to, you know, show us around your horse box, I think it would be brilliant for our listeners and hopefully viewers to see what we're talking about.
For those of you that can see me, there is a horse box. I decided to do it brown and pink were my colours. Pink for the pig, and then brown as a kind of play on words for pig in mud. Down here, you can see my menu. Lots of tasting and trialing to decide what I was going to put on my menu. There's quite a lot of limiting factors in a mobile kitchen as well. If I had an oven, it would be a different story, but there is only so many things you can do on a griddle and a fryer. So my menu kind of consists of lots of pulled pork, because that's just a crowd pleaser. Pork burgers, because I wanted to show people that burgers weren't just beef, and there's beauty in a pork burger. Loaded fries, but again, all pork, so bacon, jalapenos, pulled pork, you name it, we do it. And then when I do morning events, I do bacon and sausage rolls, because great for morning events, but I can't do them in the evening, obviously. Now I'm in my horse box. You can kind of see I went for a rustic renovation. So you've got the wood on the back, everything stainless steel down to regulations. Got copper lights, which I think just help give the horse box a bit of character. In terms of the cooking, I've got my griddle there. So that's where I cook all my burgers, bacon, sausages, things like that. And then just behind me, a deep fat fryer. So fries, that's pretty much all that does, but who doesn't love a fry? With the regulations and things like that, you have to have an extraction fan. I've got a sink over there, and just all the worktops are stainless steel. So I think it looks really smart.
It looks incredible, I have to say. So how many people can you serve out of your kitchen, roughly?
That all really depends on the menu. So if we've, you know, if someone comes to me, we've got 80 people, but would really like to try eat in an hour or two, I say that's absolutely fine, but we need to cut down the menu a bit so I can just, I know exactly what I'm doing, and I can serve all at once. I think the most I've done is about 200 in an evening, but that was hectic. I try not to do as many as that. Pub events, it would usually about 50 people, things like that. So it really just depends on the event. But the main thing is just being organised, really, and knowing what people want.
So what do you think the most popular thing on your menu might be?
I'd say that's quite an easy question, actually. I would say by far the pulled pork wraps. Everyone absolutely loves them. They either come with barbecue or hoisin sauce, so appeals to everyone.
Sounds like a very good choice to me. But I think that might be a point where we are going to pause the conversation, and we will catch back up with you shortly, Molly. But coming up, we will be hearing about how UK red meat and dairy exports have hit a record high.
Hi, I'm Alice Perry with the latest from AHDB for the week commencing the 25th of May. Our chair, Emily Norton, has responded to the latest Farm Assurance Review Progress Report, highlighting work on 14 key recommendations and continued efforts alongside industry partners to support changes within the farm assurance schemes. We've also published a joint paper with the NFU outlining the purpose, scope and value of farm assurance. New opportunities for UK agri-food exports will follow the UK's trade deal with the Gulf Cooperation Council. Tariffs are to be removed on products including dairy, cereals and lamb, helping improve competitiveness in a region where demand for high-quality imports continues to grow. And farmers have the chance to get ahead on environmental planning with our new series of baselining roadshows. The countrywide events happening in June will provide practical guidance on measuring and understanding farm data. That's all for now. Find out more at ahdb.org.uk.
Welcome to AHDB's Forage for Knowledge update for Thursday the 21st of May. This week's average growth at 63 kilos of dry matter per hectare is lower than the same period in previous years. With slurry and fertiliser applications going on, it's worthwhile thinking about what else could be limiting grass growth. Are your soils working at their optimum, be that biologically, structurally or chemically? Liming and correcting suboptimal pH opens the possibilities of increasing availability of NPK and S from biological or chemical sources. Also, to capture the full potential of clover to reduce bag nitrogen, pH needs to be 6.5. Check and lime if necessary. On grass quality, the averages this week have been 20.3% dry matter, 12.3 ME, 20.9 protein. I'm Emily Udall. For more analysis and commentary from Piers Badnall, go to the AHDB website and search Forage for Knowledge.
It's the Ag Show. I am producer Martin, aka Martin Winch, in for another week, ably assisting Charlotte Fawkes-Reese. And Charlotte, it is time for the news.
Oh,
what have we got in the news this week? What's your pick?
So we've heard from a successful young woman already, Molly. And I think actually that ties in quite nicely to my news pick for this week, because actually International Women's Day takes place on the 8th of March. And the aim of International Women's Day is twofold. So it's there to celebrate progress and also to drive action towards gender equality. And at its heart, it's recognising the social, economic, cultural and political achievements of women, while also acting as a global call to address the inequalities that still exist and to mobilise individuals, organisations and communities to take positive action. And really importantly, International Women's Day is inclusive. It's not just for women. And message around this is very clear. Everyone, everywhere has a part to play in helping to forge a more gender equal world, whether that's through allyship, leadership, education, or support. Now, you very much might be thinking, Charlotte, why is that newsworthy for the Ag Show? Well, agriculture has for a long time been viewed as a very male-dominated industry. And actually, for many outside of the sector, the typical farmer is still imagined as being male, so both as the face and that front line of farming. But that picture really does ignore the hugely important role that women play across agriculture. So whether that's from running businesses and managing finances to caring for livestock, driving innovation, or even, you know, holding families together, their contribution is woven into every part of the sector. And often that role is that supportive and behind the scenes one, which means that it can sometimes go unnoticed, but is absolutely vital. And this year, the International Women's Day theme is Give to Gain. And it's that reminder that when we support others, benefits come back to us all. And progress very much happens together. So our male allies really matter. And that's in how we can encourage confidence, share opportunities, back ambition, and create an industry where women feel able to step forward, grow, and lead. Because when agriculture gives women the support and recognition they deserve, such as Molly, we all gain. So that's stronger farms, stronger communities, and a more resilient future for an industry that actually we are all really proud to be part of. So might be me on my little soapbox there, but I thought it was very much relevant and interesting for my news piece this week.
Absolutely. Well said.
Martin, how about you? What have you got in the news?
Well, on the last episode, I did ask for her immediate return and reinstatement as an Ag Show presenter, and I sort of got my wish. So I give you Hannah Clark with something she recorded earlier, the highlights of our lamb market outlook.
Domestic lamb supply is forecast to tighten in 2026, and that's shaping the market and trade outlook for the year ahead.
UK sheep meat production is expected to ease this year, down by 3% compared to 2025 to 264,000 tonnes. Now that's largely due to a smaller breeding flock and also expectations of a slightly reduced lamb crop coming to market.
But supply won't be tight all year, as we're expecting a higher proportion of old season lambs have been carried over into 2026. Recent slaughter and inventory data point to more product being available in the first few months of the year.
Domestic consumption, though, is forecast to remain steady. While household budgets remain under pressure, lamb still holds a special place at the dinner table, especially for holiday meals and things like Easter roasts.
Given these supply and demand trends, we expect the proportion of imports on the market to grow. Improved trade access from Australia is a factor here, and New Zealand will continue to be a major supplier. But growth may be capped by production constraints in these exporting countries. Exports will continue to play a major role for the UK sheep meat market. Our outlook suggests that the UK may benefit this year from strong European market conditions. However, the volume that we're able to trade may be limited by domestic production.
And you can read all the market outlooks actually on the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk. So there's lamb, there's beef, there's pork, there's dairy, etc. And agshow@ahdb.org.uk is the email address if you want to hazard a guess as to when Hannah Clark will actually make a proper return to this show. Good to see her in wellies though. Clark's on farm, definitely on that one. Right, so that's a couple of bits in the news. I think there's a third piece that you want to talk about as well, Charlotte.
Yeah, I would like to talk about some of the positive news which we have, which is on that exports front. And that's for both dairy and red meat, because I recently caught up with AHDB's International Trade Development Director, Jonathan Eckley, to get all the details.
So some really exciting news that was released last week with 2025 year-end export data for both red meat and dairy. So in both of those categories that we support, we broke through the £2 billion marker for those sectors for the first time. £2.2 billion worth of dairy products exported outside of the UK, which is a 17% increase on last year. And again, for red meat, we smashed through £2 billion for the first time, which is 12% higher on the year. So that's really exciting, bringing over £4 billion into our UK livestock sectors.
And I know the EU is really, really important, isn't it, for a lot of our exports. But we've also been seeing some quite strong demand elsewhere. Do you want to talk us through where some of these opportunities have been?
EU remains centre stage, obviously, for lamb exports. It's taken over 90%. And similar volume, 80% for beef and dairy. So really important market close to home for high-value product. But obviously, you know, we look further afield to offset the risk of over-reliance. So places like the US are quite exciting. There's a new agreement with US authorities on beef quota, for example, which helps us with the tariff. So that will be a slow burn, but it's a great opportunity to have that. And of course, we can't ignore the Far East. So the Far East, really important, particularly for our pork exporters. China's our biggest market, and Southeast Asia hold lots of opportunities as well. And no means least outside is the Middle East and North Africa. So the Middle East, a really great opportunity in the long term for high value lamb. And, you know, we're trying to balance our carcasses in the meat sector. It's really important we can sell 100% of our carcasses, and we call it carcass balance. So there are some products that have very low demand here in the UK, and they might be in demand in somewhere like West Africa. So there's lots of opportunity. The EU is key and a really big market and a high value market, but we have different cuts and different products that we want to ship, and we look where they are.
So having these record levels of exports, actually, what does that mean for our farmers on the ground here back in Britain?
So that £4 billion coming into the sector is really important. So of course, you know, I mean, the big market for UK produce, both in the dairy and the meat sectors, is the UK, because we've got over 60 million wealthy consumers. But for products that we either have in a surplus or have low value, it's really important we find a market that values those to bring that money into the sector. And that is will then feed back down to the farm gate price. And we've all seen examples over the years, back in the dark old days, where we've lost access to markets. And it really puts downward pressure on the prices. So it's not all about export, but that £4 billion coming into the UK sectors is really important to add that value throughout the supply chain.
You mentioned about market access. Obviously, with some areas, we're having much more improved access to certain countries and exporting to them. Sort of what impact have we had at HDB on helping with some of this?
So market access, it does remain in the gift of the competent authority, but the role at HDB plays is really key in that. So it's a very technical area of work. So HDB will provide the evidence into those market access negotiations. So very technical meat scientists, for example, on the meat side, will help answer questionnaires. We also provide some project management to keep that moving, because it's really important those negotiations keep moving at a pace. Gaining market access is critical. If you're not having access, you're just simply not at the races. And of course, what we need is a broad portfolio of access. So we've got access to many, many markets to spread the risk across those. And the work we do, so there's an ongoing work to improve access to China, Vietnam and places. We've recently gained access, when I say we, the UK has recently gained access to places like Mexico. And that's really important to us because it gives us opportunities to sell different parts of the animal to different markets.
What is it that's really appealing about British? Because obviously we've got a lot of unique selling points, haven't we? But what is it you find is something that really helps it get across the line?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of consumer research in our market intelligence department over the years. The UK does have a reputation for high quality standards. The Union Jack underpins that. So high quality produce, food safety is really important in some markets. So our standards from the farm throughout the supply chain are really important in markets in the Far East. Animal welfare, that's important in some high value markets. Grass-fed, you know, I mean, a lot of people can do grass-fed, but our natural environment, you know, here I am in sunny Oxfordshire and it's not so sunny. So when I'm in America next week or Tokyo the week after, we can talk about the rain we have. So our climate is really good for growing grass and producing a really high quality product. Food safety is important, and that gives a product that consumers can enjoy around the world and trust.
We were chatting a little bit before this, weren't we, about, you know, all the places you've been jet setting off to. It's not all a jolly though, is it? There's lots of work that goes on behind the scenes on these trips that you do. What are some of the really important ones that we have coming up throughout the calendar year that you're going to be attending?
Okay, so look, we've just done one of the biggest shows in the world in Dubai a couple of weeks ago on both meat and dairy. That's a really big show. It's strategically located, so the world goes to Dubai in January this year. Shows we've got coming up will be in Washington, an event on mainly on beef and lamb for that one. CL China is really important in May for the pig industry. FHA in Singapore, we've got the biggest dairy delegation going out to Singapore in the end of April. And of course, this year, all roads lead to CL Paris, which is in October, which will be the biggest food and drink showcase in the world. We'll have a big stand there, our biggest stand of the year. We'll host a very high quality dinner of getting really high quality beef, lamb and dairy products in front of discerning consumers from around the world. So that'll be kind of towards the end of the year, but that'll be a really important show where we have our biggest stand.
A great way to showcase some of the amazing things that we produce, isn't it, really? But I think producer Marsha and I have had some horror stories this week going on with airports and flights. With all the time that you spend out of the country, I'm sure you must have some too.
Yeah, I have a few because we do a few. Team and actually many levy payers know because I'm not at all bitter about the suitcase I last saw in Johannesburg in 2012. But probably more recently was a really good example. I know it sounds really glamorous and look, we're lucky to go around the world promoting our great products to people. So we were flying to Dubai for Gulf Food, one of the biggest shows in the world. Our flight from London to Dubai was cancelled because of a technical problem on the aircraft. So the airline nicely sent us over to Paris to get an Air France jet out of Paris. So I had lunch in Charles de Gaulle Airport, which is actually not that glamorous. Only to find then our Air France flight got cancelled as well that evening. So a lot of scurrying around, a lot of phone calls to actually get on another jet. So we managed to get another flight direct to Dubai. But unfortunately, our luggage didn't make it. But on that occasion, it did catch us up. Mine caught me up after a couple of days and my colleague's, hers was a little bit slower, but we did get it back in the end. So that's the main thing.
So what you're saying is it's amazing going around the world and talking to all these people, but it's not as glamorous as you might think it might be.
Hand luggage only, right?
Hi, I'm Annabelle Twinbarrow, analyst at the AHDB, here with a look at the domestic dairy market for the week commencing 25th of May. GB milk volumes have now slipped into marginal year-on-year decline, and we are now past the seasonal spring peak. March deliveries were 0.1% lower year-on-year, and May-to-date volumes are down by 0.4%, though this is against a record high. In the latest UK wholesale price survey for May, prices remained under pressure, impacted by ample supplies of fat. The average price for mild cheddar was £2,940 a tonne, 1% lower than the last period. Bulk cream prices remain at half the value of a year ago. Minimal movement in the average month pricing gave an average for the month of £1,220 a tonne. The butter price moved down £200 a tonne, 6%, to £3,330 a tonne. However, S&P average prices price did see another month of strength, ending at an average of £2,500 a tonne, a month-on-month increase of £140 a tonne. This is the only commodity that is more valuable than a year ago, as demand for protein remains strong. For the latest data and analysis on red meat, dairy and arable markets, head to ahdb.org.uk and click on Markets and Prices.
This is The Ag Show with me, Martin Winch, and Charlotte Fawkes-Reese. Remember, if you want to get in touch with the show, agshow@ahdb.org.uk is the email address with any story suggestions and ideas for us to feature on a future show.
I think now it's time to welcome back Molly-Ann Jimson, who's been patiently waiting in her converted horse trailer to talk to us some more. Molly, it's been great finding out about your business and what you've been doing. But I think something that's really important to touch on as well is actually you've been picking up a number of accolades recently. And Young Pig Farmer of the Year at the National Pig Awards in November. That's incredible. I mean, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I've known about the National Pig Awards for a couple of years. In 2024, I was lucky to be nominated, but didn't win. But I was just absolutely overwhelmed to be nominated. And then last year, I was absolutely amazed to win the Young Pig Farm of the Year. It was an incredible evening. So, you know, you're one of three that have been shortlisted, but you don't actually find out until the awards evening. So it's quite a nerve-wracking evening. But I must say, once you knew who the winner was, there was lots of celebrations, so absolutely overjoyed.
I was going to say, I think I'd be too nervous to eat. And usually the good thing about these award ceremonies is that they have put on great food. So you almost want them to do the awards before the dinner, don't you? So you can then just go and enjoy it. But what was it like getting up on stage?
Oh, goodness. It was just, I just felt everyone backed you so much. I've always found this with the pig industry. It's quite a small industry. So even though there was hundreds of people in the room, you know, you knew so many faces. It was like everyone was so happy for you. So it was just a really overwhelming experience, really. But the support, you know, just couldn't ask for more.
And I hope, because it is such a tight-knit community, that they all bought you a drink to celebrate with you.
Absolutely. As you can imagine.
But it's not just in November that you've had some, you know, lovely and successful news. You've also been awarded recently a scholarship, haven't you? What does that entail and where was that from?
Yeah, so it's the Suffolk Agricultural Association Rising Star Scholarship, which I actually asked them this question in the interview. So the award was aimed at getting people between 19 and 30, but working people rather than in education, more connected with their association. You know, you submit an application, go for an interview process. And I'm very lucky that this one has quite a lot of amazing experiences linked to it. So I'm off to the Agricultural Commonwealth in South Africa. Awards presentations, I mean, it's absolutely incredible the year that's ahead of me. You know, I'm absolutely chuffed.
So do they have things like already booked in your diary? When are you going off to South Africa?
Yeah, so that's actually just been booked. I just need to book the flights now. So it's the end of October into early November. It kind of has a pre-conference tour, which means going around a couple farms, which is going to be absolutely incredible. In South Africa, and then you join up with the main conference for 4 days, 4 evenings of formal dinners and South African barbecues. And, you know, there's still so many details to come, but from what I do know, it sounds absolutely incredible.
I was going to say, you'll be coming back with loads of inspo for things you can put on your menu then, with all the South African flavours.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? A special or two from my trips away.
And you're also very active as well, aren't you, within, you're part of Ladies and Pig?
Yeah, that's right. I help out where I can with Ladies and Pigs. I've been involved for 7 years now, something like that. They're absolutely amazing organisation. What they do for the pig industry, you know, really should be recognised. basically trying to get people to eat more British pork, which is everything I stand for, so I can't praise them high enough.
How important do you think it is to be sort of getting involved with organisations like that for trying to encourage people to be supporting British farmers, and that education piece to the public? You know, how important do you think that is?
I think it couldn't be more important, personally. I think most people, it's a lack of education, like you say, but actually a lot of people want to learn. So that's what I think is great about Blazing Pigs and going into shows. You teach people so many things that they just didn't know because they weren't in that circle of people. People don't even necessarily know to look for British meat and the red tractor and what it means for food standards and requirements. So I think it's just an excellent thing to just firstly just tell people what it's all about. It's then their choice whether they want to follow it or not. So really important.
And I think it's one of those things, isn't it, as well? Like, obviously, you've put yourself forward in a lot of ways. So whether that is for the scholarships or going forward for awards, but also you're then putting yourself forward for helping, making sure that there is that demand for what we are producing as, you know, as a farmer, having that market for it. And I think that's really important. And, you know, you should deserve a real pat on the back for that, because lots of people like to, you know, talk about these things, but not necessarily everyone likes to do on them. So it's so wonderful to have particularly a young woman in farming that is being so active and so visible in what you're doing. So well done to you, and huge congratulations on everything that you've got going on.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you for your kind words.
And before you go, Molly-Ann, just a couple of questions for me. Firstly, remind everybody what the name of your business is so they can spot you out and about.
Yes, so it's called Pigs in very bright, large pink letters, so I can't be missed.
And finally, the ultimate question, when it comes to a bacon butty, is it red or brown sauce?
Definitely red for me.
Is the right answer.
You can come back again now you've answered with red.
Ah, the music bed that signals the end of yet another Ag Show. A really good episode. Inspiring again. 3 weeks on the trot, we've had some inspiring stories about how to maybe diversify things on farm. And certainly Molly, prime example of that. And great to know that she does stick red sauce on her bacon butty. So definitely a fan of Molly, and we'll get her back on the show.
Well, to make sure you don't miss out on our next lot of inspiring stories that we like to feature here on the Ag Show, make sure you are subscribed wherever you might listen to your podcast. Or I think this is very much a case of the last couple of weeks, it's definitely worth watching us on YouTube to see everything that's going on. Also, make sure if you have got anything that you would like us to feature, or if you've got a question or a comment, or when you think Hannah might be back with us, get in touch. That can be on any of our social platforms or via email, and that's agshow@ahdb.org.uk. Bye!
Bye!